Bless you.
Scott, are we live? All right, here we go. You got gentlemen, ladies ready?
I am.
All right. Good morning. It's approximately 10 a.m. Thursday, July 12, 2012. This is the Public Service Commission meeting in the Public Service Commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the Capitol for the purpose of conducting three public hearings on proposed changes to the Commission's administrative rules. The rules cases being heard today are case number PU12162 concerning public utility rules, case number PU12165 concerning siting rules, case number RC12166 concerning reclamation rules. This is Brian Kalk, Chairman of the PSC. With me today are Commissioners Kevin Kramer and Bonnie Fetch. And I'll turn it over to them for any opening comments. Commissioner Kramer.
Good morning. Welcome, everybody. I expect that while this will be a thorough hearing, it will also be efficient. So I look forward to that.
Commissioner Fetch.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for appearing today and expressing interest in the Commission's proposed rule changes.
Thank you, Bonnie. My introductory comments today apply to all three public hearings. The Commission has scheduled these public hearings to allow everyone the opportunity to submit information or comments concerning the adoption of the proposed changes to the North Dakota Administrative Code. All comments received at these public hearings will be considered by the Commission, together with all other written comments received. Interested persons have until July 23, 2012 to submit written comments. The Public Service Commission will consider all the comments received and address the comments in its written decision. Anyone may request a copy of the decision, and one will be provided via email or regular mail. The decision and all other filings in each case will also be available on the Commission's website. This hearing is being broadcast over the Internet and is also being electronically recorded. We ask anyone who would like to comment to take the witness chair and speak into the microphone so the broadcast and recording will be of good quality. When the red light is on, the broadcast is live. Everyone will be given the opportunity to speak. If you have a prepared statement, we would appreciate it if you provide a written copy for the file. There is also a sign-up sheet. Where's our sign-up sheet today, Adelana? The sign-up sheet is working its way around the room. It'll be up front at the witness stand. For each of the cases, please sign the sheet if each case in which you're interested. First case. I'll now open the first hearing for the comments on the proposed public utility rules, case number PU12162. Does anyone wish to testify on case number PU12162 relating to public utility rules? If you could just your name and your position for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Mike Diller, Director of Economic Regulation for the Public Service Commission. Do you want me to read into the record my testimony? I think it's been circulated.
Whatever you'd like to do, if you'd like to read it or if you'd just like to get an overview of it and submit it, that would be fine as well.
It's pretty short.
The testimony.
Should read it in? Okay. Go ahead and read it in.
The purpose of my testimony is to explain the proposed change to the Commission's administrative rules, which will enact Section 690910 of the North Dakota Administrative Code pertaining to discovery response time. The new proposed rule entitled Discovery, Section 690910, is intended to canonize the practice that is already occurring, namely that written requests for information or interrogatories are responded to within 10 business days. Currently, the Commission does not have a time frame set forth by rule, and therefore the allowable time for a response to an interrogatory defaults to 30 days according to Rule 33 of the North Dakota Rules of Civil Procedure. The activities of the Commission and those of the utilities affected by this rule does not allow for a 30-day time frame in practice or theory. Further, the state laws governing public utilities are prescriptive, requiring that certain applications be processed within tight time frames. There will be times where 10 business days are unreasonable by virtue of the volume of interrogatories or other unrelated events. However, the rule provides latitude for such occurrences. Again, the purpose of this rule is to establish an official time frame for responding to interrogatories related to public utility regulations so that there is no question about interrogatory response times absent an ad hoc agreement of less than 30 days. This concludes my testimony. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you, Mike. I don't have any questions, Commissioner.
I do not.
Kramer? Mr. Fetch?
No, I don't, and I think it's a good idea to establish such a time frame and rule.
All right, perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Yep, thank you.
Do we have anyone else that wishes to testify this morning? I see Jerry Lane headed this way. Jerry, if you could do the same, name and who you work for the record.
My name is Jerry Lynn, and I'm an analyst with the Public Utilities Division of the Commission.
Thank you, Jerry.
And first, I'll testify on changes to Section 6909.02.35 of the Administrative Code that adopts the National Electric Safety Code by reference. That's NESC, and it's updated every 5 years, actually. And the changes proposed this time would just simply adopt the newest version, the 2012 edition, instead of the previously adopted 2007 edition. And the purposes of adopting the new 2012 edition is to ensure that North Dakota's safety requirements keep pace with industry standards. In practice, utilities are already committed to safety and are already applying this new 2012 edition. And so that concludes my testimony on the National Electric Safety Code. If there's any questions.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. I don't, once again, have any questions. Commissioner Kramer?
No. Very good.
Fine. No, I don't. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
I also have testimony here on a rulemaking to repeal the prohibition of master metering.
Is that underneath the same PU 12162?
Yes, it is.
Fair enough. Yep.
And this would repeal Section 6909.02.37 of the Administrative Code pertaining to master metering of electric service. Master metering is the practice of using a single meter to measure electricity consumed in a multi-tenant building. For example, an apartment or business complex where the cost of electric service is paid by the landlord. The landlord recovers electric service costs in a manner similar to other operating expenses, mostly through rent. Master metering is not the same as resale or submetering. A different section of the rules, Section 6909.02.15, prohibits the landlord from submeting or reselling the electricity. So the proposed repeal of the master metering prohibition would not change that. Section 6909.02.37 prohibits master metering of electric service in new or substantially remodeled buildings with certain exceptions. The rule is only applicable to electric service providers provided by investor-owned utilities, which are subject to the Commission's regulatory jurisdiction. Those are MDU, NSP, and Xcel Energy. I'm sorry, or Xcel Energy, Otter Tail Power Company. The rule does not require cooperatives. It does not apply to cooperatives or municipals, and they do not fall under the Commission's regulatory jurisdiction. There's not a similar rule for natural gas, so there's no prohibition in the Commission's rules against master metering of natural gas service. And natural gas service is often paid for by the landlord in multi-tenant buildings where heat is from a central natural gas-fired boiler or furnace. It's my understanding that the Commission adopted this section following the enactment of the Federal Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, which was enacted in response to the energy crisis during the 70s. PURPA required state regulatory agencies to consider adopting specific standards to encourage conservation and efficient use of energy. One of those standards in PURPA was a prohibition against the master metering of electric service. The theory behind the standard is that people who directly pay their own electric bills will use less electricity. Separate metering also protects tenants who use electricity from subsidizing the higher usage of other tenants. The rule has always contained exceptions, and the possibility of obtaining a waiver. Commercial and residential buildings not subject to the rules include hotels, motels, dormitories, nursing homes, homes for the elderly, and low-income rental housing, where the cost of electricity is included in the rent and where rent is based on a tenant's ability to pay. In addition, an owner of a building, of a substantially remodeled building, may request a waiver if they are able to firmly demonstrate that the cost of purchasing and installing separate meters in each building would exceed the long-run benefits of separate metering. Over the years, concerns regarding the master metering of electric service have included the following competitive disadvantages. Apartment buildings served by non-jurisdictional electric service providers are permitted to master meter. Thus, landlords receiving service from jurisdictional utilities are sometimes at a competitive disadvantage when renters prefer electricity included in their rent. Landlords with electric heat can be further disadvantages when competitors heating with natural gas offer heat-paid apartments. Construction costs. Separate metering requires additional space for meters and meter sockets. Additional expenses are also incurred for wiring. Multiple customer charges. Separate metering causes each tenant to incur a monthly residential customer charge from the utility. In addition, the landlord incurs a monthly commercial customer charge for common areas. Master metering results in a single monthly commercial customer charge for the entire building. Backup generation is not feasible with separate meters. Backup generation provides tenants with convenience and security and offers the landlords the ability to participate in load management programs. Sometimes backup generation is necessary during storm-related outages to ensure sump pumps work and buildings are not damaged by flooding. Rewiring for tenant changes. Separate metering can require rewiring of commercial multi-tenant buildings when reconfiguring floor space for new tenants. So discontinuation of electric service for non-payment is another problem. Many of the customers whose service are being discontinued for non-payment owe large balances. Some of these customers have failed to keep previous payment arrangements, and utilities are often unwilling to restore service without full payment of the amount due, an additional deposit payment, and reconnection charges. Customers either find the money or do without electricity. Repealing 6909-0237 may provide customers in this situation with the option of renting an apartment where electric service is included. Uncollectible accounts cause all customers to pay higher rates. If the master metering prohibition were to be repealed, perhaps the level of uncollectible accounts will decrease. So that concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you, Jerry. I didn't have any questions, just appreciate you digging up the information about the natural gas. I'd never even thought about that not being affected in this, so thank you.
There is one more thing I probably should have mentioned, and that is I had an email from Otter Tail Power Company.
I was going to ask if you heard from the other utilities.
Yeah, and Otter Tail said that they will file some written comments by the July 23rd date, and they'll say in their written comments that there may be some level of scrutiny over master metering appropriate for Otter Tail, and they also have a tariff change that they would need to make. In addition to that, they point out that we have another rule. That I didn't bring up here. It's thanks, Mike. The other rule is classification of service 6909-0214. And in that subsection 2 of that rule, there's a paragraph in there that just discusses that a landlord renting space to separate business enterprises in the same building may take electric service through a single meter on the commercial service rate, providing electric services furnished for occupants as part of the rent, subject, however, to the provisions restricting master metering contained in Section 690237. So if the commission were to repeal this rule in 6909-0237, there'd have to be another rule change to remove that reference from this rule in 6909-0214.
Well, is it or isn't? I mean, isn't it by implication if there is no such a rule? In other words, I don't sense an urgency to have to change another rule if it's referencing something that's repealed.
I don't think there's an urgency because if it's not there, there's nothing it can right. mean. But also, because of that, it can be done in this package because it doesn't do anything different.
Sure.
So
well, then we ought to just do it in this
before
package.
Before we're done.
Okay.
Sure. But it's good to bring it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Excuse me, Alana. Are you saying that we don't need to send out separate notice and start from the beginning?
Not on that change because that doesn't substantively do anything different.
Okay, it just harmonizes them.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Mr. Lander, do you have any other comments?
I don't think so. That's
yeah.
it.
Questions?
Well, my question was going to be if we heard from the utilities. I mean, I see MDU in the room, but nothing from XL. We have not heard.
No, nothing. Not to speak for MDU, but I could add that they...
I'm going to name this the Tammy rule. So I already know. There,
yeah,
is it? Yeah.
You're familiar with MDU previously.
Maybe even the Tammy doctrine.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar.
Tammy's been lobbying.
There's a long history in this.
All right.
Okay.
I have nothing else. Thanks.
Questions?
I do not. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Do we have anyone else that wishes to testify on case number PU12162?
Tammy Eberle with Montana Dakota Utilities Company. Since we're in the room, and to indicate that we do support the repeal of this rule. We have faced a number of the situations that Jerry Lean called out in his testimony, and we find that it would be more advantageous, more efficient to repeal the rule.
Okay,
so
thank you.
We thank you for that.
Do you have any questions, Kevin?
No, but I thank you for it, too, because quite honestly, it's a topic that's been around for a while, as you know, and although never attempted to have the rule change since I've been on the commission, I know it was previously, and that not all of the utilities were of this one accord on the topic. And so while it is obvious that there are certain economic advantages to MDU to keep it as it is, I think it's admirable that you understand that customer service and efficiency sometimes has a high priority as well. So I just my appreciation to MDU for your position. Thank you.
I have no questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tammy. All right. Any further testimony for case number PU12162? Anyone else wish to testify? And one last time, anyone else wish to testify? All the comments made today and those provided in writing through July 23rd, 2012 will be considered and discussed in our decision. Also, any changes made to the proposed rules due to the Commission's review of comments received or the Commission's discussion will be explained in the written decision. The record will remain open until Monday, July 23, 2012. I will now close the hearing on case number PU12-162. We will now open the public hearing for comments on the proposed siting rules, case number PU12-165. Does anyone wish to testify on case number PU12-165? Relating to siting rules.
You don't have to raise your hand, Jerry.
Commissioner, if I can interject, somebody came in after we started. There is a sign-up sheet that went around. Would you please be sure and sign? Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
That's the old ALJ coming.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. All right, Jerry, thank you. You know the drill.
Okay, again, I'm Jerry Lynn from the Public Utilities Division. And now I'll testify with changes in Article 6906 of the North Dakota Administrative Code and as promulgated under Chapter 49-22 of the North Dakota Century Code, which is otherwise known as the Siting Act. The major purpose of the rule changes here are to update and codify the Commission's existing siting application guidelines and establish setback and other requirements for siting of wind generators, and to implement abbreviated procedures for siting small wind projects with less than 20 megawatts of generating capacity. The Commission's existing siting guidelines were established in 1979. Over the years, technology and procedure have evolved, and the guidelines needed to be rewritten to reflect the various changes. As examples, Mylar maps and stereo air photographs are no longer needed, and wind turbine sightings were not considered during the development of the guidelines. Further, updated relevant guidelines should be promulgated as rules. Amendments are proposed to do just that, and there will no longer be any guidelines applicable to siting requirements. The proposed changes are also helped to clarify the process for service of siting notices by explicitly indicating that services notices can be accomplished by electronic mail. Updates were also made to the list of agencies that need to be served with notices of filings. A proposed new exclusion area is included to prevent energy conversion and transmission facilities from being located within 1,200 feet of a nuclear missile launch facility. Additional proposed exclusion areas have been added for wind turbines, which prevent a wind turbine from being located within a distance of 1.1 times the turbine height, which is often referred to as fall-down distance, from railroads, road right-of-ways, electric transmission lines, and property boundaries. A new avoidance area is proposed where turbine noise 100 feet from a residence or community building will exceed 50 dBA. The proposed rules include the opportunity for a property owner to waive this avoidance area and the property line exclusion area in writing. I bring up here also that there was a group that considered these and drafted this, and the group did not propose a setback of a specific distance from an occupied residence. In the past, the Commission's done this on a case-by-case basis and has generally settled into some numbers, but they're not proposed in this package. A proposed new chapter is added to 6906 to provide an abbreviated siting process for small wind energy conversions facilities with generating capacity of 20 megawatts or less. In the 2011 legislative session, the legislature enacted Senate Bill 2196, lowering the siting jurisdictional threshold for wind farms to half a megawatt, rather than requiring small wind farms to follow the same procedure process that is applicable to larger wind farms, an abbreviated process that still protects the environment as proposed for these smaller projects. In short, an applicant for a wind farm sized between 20 megawatts and 0.5 megawatts would certify that the project does not affect an exclusion area and include a description of any avoidance area impacted and the reasons it cannot be avoided. The Commission may then issue a notice of opportunity for hearing, or if it deems appropriate, issue the requested permit or certificate without conducting a hearing. So that concludes my testimony on the rules here. I would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. I actually had a couple this time. The change about 1,200 feet from a nuclear missile launch facility, I imagine that came out of some of our hearings in the Minot and Berthold area. Would it matter much if we just had 1,200 feet from any type of launch facility? Because we have no idea what kind of missiles are in the ground. It's a nuance, but...
As I understood it, from the airbase has a launch control facility and a launch facility, and they have a requirement that they be 1,200 feet from the center of the launch control facility. There's a fence around the launch control facility that's not 1,200 feet, so there's a distance outside and a circular radius around the launch.
No, I agree with all that. It's just the definition of what we're going to call the avoidance area. Make sure that matches what...
If you go further than that, you're going further than the Air Force's requirement.
No, I'm not talking about the distance, Jerry. The 1,200 feet is fine.
I meant if you go to apply other than just a launch control facility for the nuclear launch sites. A launch facility. Then you're going further than the Air Force would require this. I'm not further, not in distance, but to apply to different facilities.
So they prefer this language?
Their requirement only applies to a launch facility, a nuclear launch facility, a nuclear missile launch facility. It does not require...
Okay.
It doesn't apply to a launch control facility. It wouldn't apply to a radar base facility or anything like that. It was specific to that.
Fair enough. And then I like trying to tie our hands on setbacks from different sized turbines. I think that makes good sense. Basically, imagine that was because of literally we don't know how big the turbines are going to get, and it doesn't tie us at all. Was there anybody that tried to say this is the certain setback they wanted, or was that pretty fluid discussion?
Yeah, we didn't get any discussion that anybody wanted it. We did. It was mentioned that the commission has used the 1,400-foot level in the past, but I don't think there was a desire to set it exactly at 1,400 feet.
Perfect. And then the last question, Jerry, was we went through the Devil's Lake wind hearing where we were just one turbine and we did the abbreviate. I think that was the right call. But there's nothing in this rules package that if we got a wind farm that was 18 megawatts and we wanted to do a full hearing that would restrict us from doing that, is there?
No.
It's just that we have the ability to do abbreviated for 20 megawatts or less.
Yes. Okay. It's an abbreviated procedure, but the commission could issue a full notice of hearing rather than notice of opportunity for hearing on it if at the commission's discretion.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. That was all that I had. Commissioner Kramer?
Well, I know you referenced the working group of state government and industry representatives. I mean, has this been presented to MPower, specifically the MPower Commission? Have they been?
I don't know if it was specifically presented to them or not. But there were people on the group that are with MPower.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are a lot of the same people, but
yeah.
I guess perhaps at some point it might be worth just sort of letting the committee know.
Yeah, I agree.
I have nothing else, though. Thank you.
Mr. Fetch?
I don't have anything, Commissioner. Thank you.
All right. All right, Jerry, anything else?
I don't think so.
All right, thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
It was a dangerous question to ask, Jerry.
Yeah, I was a little surprised you did ask.
All right, do we have anyone else that wishes to testify today on case number PU12165?
Professor Fawn.
Yeah, Dr. Fawn. Pat, if you could get your name and who you work for the record.
My name is Patrick Fawn. I'm the Director of Compliance and Competitive Markets Division at the Public Service Commission. And I have a comment on the rule 6906-0106, which is the siting fee refund.
Okay.
As our siting process has evolved in the recent past, we've been more involved in hiring contractors for construction inspections and post-construction inspections. And I would like to suggest to the commission that we need to change this rule to allow for the use of the application fee and not doing any interim refunds until our construction inspections have been completed. In the past, what we've done is we've made interim refunds and then retained only $5,000 for post-construction inspections. And in the past, that had been staff inspections. And now as we are using, we're contracting with inspectors, that $5,000 doesn't isn't adequate, and we've been using more of the siting fee for inspections. Mm-hmm. And I would propose, if the commission was interested, in, I would propose that we change this rule to wait until after the inspections have been completed and paid before we do an interim refund.
Well, that wouldn't be an interim refund then, but...
I think we would still retain the $5,000 for post-construction inspections by staff if there was some follow-up that was necessary after reviewing the reports of the construction inspectors.
So back to Kevin's question, though, so there would be no interim refunds issued at all? It would just be hold everything till some point in time?
There would still be interim refunds issued.
How would you calculate that?
After we receive all the bills related to the process, including the bills for construction inspection, okay, we would subtract that from the initial application fee.
As long as the timing worked out.
Correct. And then anything in excess of $5,000 would be refunded as an interim refund. $5,000 would be retained, and then once the tree and shrub mitigation was complete and approved by the commission and all of the follow-up work was completed, then the commission would refund the balance of what was remaining of that $5,000.
Okay. Do you have any other testimony?
I have a proposed language for the rule change if the commission would like me to hand that out.
We'd be willing to submit some comments that we could have to look at.
Sure. Can I ask a process question?
Sure.
Ilana. This is fairly substantive, and had we noticed this, and what do we have to? And I mean, you know me, I'm such a stickler for detail.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm not, but even this one captures my attention.
Pat and I talked this morning. This really was one that, for whatever reason, we just overlooked in the package. I mean, we had thought of it ages ago, and then it never got in the package.
Well, I love the idea.
But it is, and I said I'd have to think about whether it was so substantive that you should have another notice. And I'm thinking here because it truly changes. When we were talking more about additional expenses, which have always been implied, mm-hmm, even though the language talks about hearing costs.
Mm-hmm.
But then the change to the refund, hearing the actual testimony and hearing it's more about refund, I'm thinking maybe we need a notice on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be one that just gets done in another package, and we can do another package fairly soon because there's three or four other things that people have already brought up to me on other topics.
Sure.
That need rule changes.
Well, I love the rule. I love the idea. I don't imagine there'll be any pushback, all of that. As a practical matter, I mean, not that long ago, it was a tax that they didn't get anything back on. So, but, yeah, that was sort of my gut, too, as I listened. So, anyway.
Maybe flesh out some more of the details of how it would actually flow. Because I'm not sure that even $5,000, I mean, why wouldn't we hold more money than that? Because we've had problems where they go out and do inspections, and there's more work to follow on. We need to follow on
inspections. You're right on.
So it's almost, my thought would be you don't give back, you keep all the money until the project is done, because we don't know how long this stuff can linger on. We're dealing with $100,000? It's a lot
most
of money.
Of time.
But we found in some of these post-construction inspections, it can take up a lot of that money.
Well, and the other thing is, I think we're talking about some legislative changes even to the, with regard to the engineering, and you know, the specifics of hiring engineering firms, for example, that whole code is sort of drafted with the DOT in mind, not pipelines, and so maybe there's even some of that could be worked in. Bonnie, what we're doing is, and Pat's described it fairly well, but we're using more and more. Obviously, we don't have the personnel to do construction inspections of all these pipelines. the ability to use third party. We have lots of money to do it with these filing fees, but even that's somewhat hampered by restrictions in the code relating to how much you can, you know, get do an RFP for. So you know, and you hate to get too creative, you know, in the whole process of hiring. So at any rate, so this is part of a larger discussion. Is sort of my point. Alana, are we safe?
Well, I think we're safe if we decide to do
okay.
this
okay.
in that context and not do it in this packet and hold this packet up, if that's possible.
Well, I appreciate the good work, but I think that's prudent. Yeah.
It's good to point it out.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you,
Pat. So you had, Pat? That's all you had?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. We should put this on the next meeting for discussion then.
Okay.
Thanks, Pat. All right, what we got here? Does anyone else wish to testify on case number PU12165 related to siting rules? Anyone further wishing to testify? With that, all the comments provided in writing through July 23, 2012 will be considered and discussed in our decision. Also, any changes made to the proposed rules due to the Commission's review of comments received or the Commission's discussion will be explained in the written decision. The record will remain open until Monday, July 23rd, 2012. I'll now close the hearing on case number PU12165. I will now open the public hearing for comments on the proposed reclamation rules, case number RC12166. Does anyone wish to testify on case number RC12-166 relating to reclamation rules? I see Mr. Deutsch approaching. Thanks, Jim. Jim, if you could. Yeah.
I'm Jim Deutsch, Director of the Reclamation Division of the Public Service Commission. The Commission is proposing three new sections and amending several existing sections of North Dakota Administrative Code Article 6905.2 pertaining to surface coal mining reclamation operations. The Federal Office of Surface Mining has required that we add provisions for the Commission's use of the applicant violator system prior to the approval of mining permits, renewals, and certain revisions. The applicant violator system is a national database of mining companies that have unabated violations or unpaid civil penalties. A mining company that is linked to an entity in this database may be ineligible to receive a new mining permit, renewal, or revision that proposes to add acreage to a permit or to mine additional lands. I should note that the staff has used this applicant violator system for nearly 25 years pursuant to a memorandum of understanding we have with the Office of Surface Mining, but they are now requiring that we add these provisions to our rules for the use of this national applicant violator system. In addition to detailing procedures that the Commission must follow, the proposed rule changes also affect some of the ownership control information that mining companies submit in permit applications. These provisions are being added to the permit application requirements under North Dakota Administrative Code Sections 6905.2-06-01, 6905.2-06-02, 6905.1-10-01, and 6905.2-10-03, and adding new sections 6905.2-10-08 and 6905.2-10-09. The proposed rules also contain procedures for mining companies to challenge information or links in that applicant violator system. North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6905.2-10-07 is a new rule that contains the procedures for challenging ownership and control listings and findings. Two other rule changes are being proposed in case RC-12-166. One adds a new subsection to North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6905.2-05-02 with general requirements for the format of electronic permit applications. Staff determined this is necessary since recent permit applications have been filed in an electronic format and many other permits have been converted to an electronic format. And I should note that this rule does not require the filing of electronic format. It only addresses some of the formatting if they are filed electronically. The other change will make a minor correction to subsection 2 of North Dakota Administrative Code section 6905.2-0508. This change should have been made more than 15 years ago when another rule was modified to no longer require the renewal of a permit once lands in that permit are no longer mined or used in support of mining. The mining and reclamation rule changes adopted by the Commission must be effective as the counterpart federal regulations that have been issued by the Federal Office of Surface Mining within the Department of Interior. Before final adoption by the Commission, these rules will be submitted to OSM for approval as a state program amendment. I should note we have not received any comments in this rulemaking case, but an earlier draft of the changes were first sent to the Office of Surface Mining for their review, and a few changes were made before we issued the notice of hearing, and we also sent it out to industry and other interested parties, and we got a couple of suggestions on that electronic permit format provision as well. But at this time, we've not received any other comments, and this concludes my testimony.
All right. Thank you, Jim. I just had one question. You talked about electronic filing. I assume electronic filing is faster for everyone to do, but maybe that's not the right assumption. I mean, is it faster? And if it is, isn't everybody going there?
Well, some of the filing review, once it's submitted, is faster, but converting all the paper documents to electronic format is what takes time.
So it's just the whole process. It's mostly paper forms and a lot of the things and converting those forms.
Right. And in fact, we've been encouraging the Coteau Properties Company basically to try to consolidate 8 existing permits into 1 electronic permit. It would make it a whole lot easier and administratively less permit renewals and revisions and that if they would do that. But once you have these paper documents and to reformat everything to electronic, it is something that does take time. But in the long run, if these will be around for a long time, it'll be beneficial. But
okay, that's what I thought. I want to check. Thank you, Jim. Commissioner Kramer?
I have nothing. Thanks.
Following up on Commissioner Culp's inquiry about electronic filing, I don't see anything in the rules that provides for any charges for electronic filing. Have you considered whether there ought to be charges for beyond a certain page limit?
Our permit application requirements are set by statute, and those are based on for a new permit application, there's a $500 filing fee, then it's $10 per acre for whatever's land is in the permit. So, and to change that fee structure would require legislative approval. So.
So you're saying the fee would be absorbed into that filing fee?
Right.
Any costs for that would be absorbed in that?
Yeah. Well,
because I assume some of these could be pretty substantial.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Well, the cost for the filing, that's mining companies bear those costs of putting the application together in the electronic format and you know, whether it be in paper or electronic, that's a cost that the mining companies incur. It's a matter that having them in electronic format makes our review more efficient rather than paper, and particularly going back, referring to the documents where you can just pull everything up on your computer rather than going back to the vault and pulling out several 3-ring binders and dig through to find a particular map or whatever. Yeah. But I guess the cost for staff review, I think, is actually less in electronic than paper. So.
Thank you.
Anything else, Paul? Jim, do you have anything else to add? All right, thank you very much. Do we have anyone else that wishes to testify today in case number RC12166? Anyone further wish to testify in case number RC12166? All the comments provided in writing, All the comments provided in writing through July 23, 2012 will be considered and discussed in our decision. Also, any changes made to the proposed rules due to the Commission's review of comments received or the Commission's discussion will be explained in the written decision. The record will remain open until Monday, July 23, 2012. And before I close the last hearing, I just wanted to just thank staff and everyone else involved in putting all this package together, because it does take a long time to do this, but it's very important because these changes make a big effect down the road. And we already have one more that we're going to go forward. And I would, Commissioner Kramer, any closing comments?
No, other than, yeah, just thanks for making this look so easy and fast today. We know that it wasn't, so appreciate that.
I have no comments. Thank you.
All right. With that, I'll now close the hearing on RC-12166. Thank you.
Thank you.
Geez, I thought we were going to be able to hear from his horns over there.
Okay. Sherry's just here to make sure we didn't screw it up.
Yeah.
She knows when.
Who are the other people?